The call came in just after sunrise on a cool morning in late 2023. A driver headed to work slowed as he neared a pull-off outside a rural stretch in Texas. Something at the tree line looked out of place. When deputies arrived, they found the body of a young woman lying near the brush. The scene felt quiet in a way that unsettled even veteran officers. Within an hour, the name reached investigators. Destiny McLean, 28 years old, mother of three, last seen leaving home for an online meetup she had set up the night before. Her phone had gone silent soon after. Detectives worked the scene with steady hands. They knew the first hours mattered. Someone knew where she went. Someone knew why she never came back. Before long, the question became sharper. Her digital trail pointed to a stranger she had agreed to meet. Now the race began to find out who he was and what happened after she stepped out the door. Chapter 1, The First Hours. The morning air held a faint chill as deputies moved along the tree line with slow, careful steps. The area stood quiet, except for the rustle of dry grass. A pair of crime scene markers sat near Destiny McLean's body. One deputy kept a log of every movement. Another photographed each angle. Nothing about the scene looked hurried. The team understood that the smallest detail could shape the rest of the case. A supervisor arrived and took a moment to study the ground. Tire impressions curved through the dirt and faded into the road. A phone was not visible near the body. That alone raised questions. In most missing person recoveries, the phone often turned up somewhere at the scene. Here, there was nothing. The supervisor requested a grid search that extended 20 yards in every direction. A medical examiner's investigator knelt beside the body. He gave a short nod once he finished preliminary notes. The time of discovery was recorded. The position of the body was confirmed. He stood and stepped back to allow evidence techs to continue. Nothing was removed yet. Everything had to be mapped first. Two detectives from the county sheriff's office arrived shortly after 8:30 a.m. They had been briefed on the drive out. The missing person report had come in the previous afternoon. Destiny's family said she always checked in with her children. When she did not return home after meeting someone she had spoken with online, they grew worried. Her phone had gone straight to voicemail. They tried again at dawn with the same result. By that time, the call reporting a body had already reached the sheriff's office. Detective Laura Henson walked the perimeter first. The ground showed no sign of a struggle, at least not in the open area. She followed a narrow path where grass bent in a line. She paused, looked again, and called the text to mark it. It suggested someone had walked in and out of the brush in a straight path. That meant the location had likely not been chosen by accident. Someone had stood there long enough to leave a trace. Detective Marcus Clay reviewed the missing person file. It included a short timeline. Destiny left her home around 8 p.m. the night before. She told her sister she planned to meet someone she had been talking to online. She did not say the person's full name. She only said she felt safe and that they were meeting somewhere public at first. After that, the record went quiet. No one heard from her again. Clay looked up as the family liaison officer arrived. They needed to confirm identification formally before the public would be notified. A photo of Destiny had already been compared to the discovery. The clothing matched what her sister had described. The examiner confirmed features, making the identification official. Henson rejoined Clay near the patrol vehicles. Her voice stayed even as she summarized what she saw. The body had been placed, not dropped. There were no signs of robbery, no immediate indication of a vehicle collision. They would wait for the autopsy for any clear cause of death. For now, their priority was simple. They needed the timeline from the last 24 hours mapped hour by hour. A detective called in to request Destiny's phone records under an emergency provision. The carrier responded that a location ping had last placed the phone near a highway corridor about 20 minutes from the discovery site. The data ended shortly after 9 p.m. That meant she had been alive for at least an hour after leaving home. It also meant she traveled a direction different from the area she had mentioned to her sister. Clay asked dispatch to send units to canvas near the last ping. Patrol deputies drove slowly through small business lots, gas stations, and turn lanes. They spoke with clerks and reviewed exterior cameras. One clerk said a woman who looked like Destiny had come in around 8:45 p.m. She purchased a drink. The clerk remembered because she asked if the store sold chargers. She did not stay long. She walked out and turned toward the far side of the lot. Detectives obtained the store's camera footage. It showed Destiny entering the store with her phone in hand. She looked relaxed. Nothing appeared wrong. She left the store at 8:47 p.m. A silver sedan entered the lot 2 minutes later. The driver remained inside. The car left in the same direction Destiny had walked. Detectives noted the detail and asked for a still frame to be pulled for license plate clarity. The plate was difficult to read, but analysts began work on enhancing it. Around mid-morning, Destiny's sister arrived at the command post that had formed near the road. The family liaison officer kept her slightly apart from the scene to protect her from the difficult sights. She confirmed that Destiny had been messaging someone on a dating app. She had not said much about him other than that he lived in the area and wanted to meet in person. The sister had seen only a screen name and a profile photo. She did not know anything else. Henson took a detailed statement. Every name Destiny had mentioned, every detail from their last conversation. Destiny had sounded hopeful. She had been trying to rebuild her life after a difficult breakup. She did not hide that she was meeting someone new, but she kept the details limited. She wanted to avoid worry. Now those gaps mattered more than ever. Detectives next tracked the vehicle impressions near the scene. A specialist photographed and cast sections of the tread. The impressions showed a pattern consistent with mid-sized sedans. The spacing suggested a vehicle had backed in before leaving. That fit with someone arriving, stopping briefly, and then leaving with intention. At noon, the examiner transported the body for autopsy. Evidence techs continued sweeping the brush area. They found a partial footprint near the narrow path. It appeared to be from a man's athletic shoe. The print was faint but measurable. They marked it and collected a silicone cast. Back at the sheriff's office, analysts began pulling Destiny's digital activity. Her last messages showed she had confirmed a meetup location. The person she spoke with used a name that did not appear in local records. It might have been an alias. The account had connected from an IP address traced to a residential neighborhood 15 miles away. Detectives planned to check the area after verifying more data. By mid-afternoon, Henson and Clay returned to Destiny's home to speak with her family again. They needed the exact time she left. Her sister remembered it clearly. Destiny had kissed her children goodnight and stepped out around 8 sharp. She wore casual jeans and a light jacket. She did not appear distressed or uneasy. She seemed excited. The detectives then spoke with the father of Destiny's youngest child. He had exchanged texts with her earlier in the day about school plans. He said he had not seen her that evening. There had been no recent conflict. He offered phone screenshots to confirm his timeline. Detectives accepted and filed them. As evening approached, the sheriff's office released a short public statement confirming a suspicious death investigation. Destiny's name was withheld until the family could notify out-of-state relatives. Detectives continued sorting early leads. Time mattered, but so did accuracy. Rushing meant mistakes, and mistakes could challenge the case later. The last task of the day involved mapping Destiny's movement from 8 p.m. to the approximate time of death. Analysts produced a rough chart. It placed her leaving home at 8, entering the gas station at 8:45, last known phone activity at 8:58, silence at 9, estimated time of death around that general window. Clay studied the chart. He circled the digital contact. Everything pointed back to the online meetup. Whoever she agreed to meet knew the exact moment her phone went dark. That person had either been with her or close enough to make immediate decisions. Henson closed her notebook as night settled around the office. The case already felt heavy. Destiny's 3 children now faced a future without their mother. The team owed them a clear answer. They needed proof strong enough to hold in court. And that meant finding the person behind the digital profile. The first chapter of the investigation ended with one unbroken question. Who did Destiny trust enough to meet that night, and why had that decision turned fatal? The evidence so far only pointed in one direction, down the digital path she walked in her final hours. They would start there at dawn. Chapter 2, Threads in the digital fog. The sun had barely lifted when detectives returned to the office the next morning. The whiteboard that held Destiny McLean's case already carried a structure built from the first day's findings. Now the focus shifted. The scene work and timeline reconstruction were complete. The investigation moved to the second phase, the digital life. The people Destiny trusted, the contacts who had shaped her last 24 hours. Detective Laura Henson took a seat in the briefing room with a folder in front of her. Inside were screenshots recovered overnight from Destiny's phone backup. Analysts had used her carrier records to access recent cloud data. The messages covered the few days leading up to her disappearance. They held a mixture of routine conversations and something more focused. The exchanges with a man who introduced himself as Tyler. He had contacted Destiny through a dating app. His profile photo showed a man in his late 20s with an easy smile. The account had been active for only 3 weeks. Analysts noted the short lifespan because many people using false identities kept accounts new. The messages between Destiny and Tyler started polite, moved friendly, then shifted more direct. He pushed to meet sooner. She hesitated at first. After a day of back and forth, she agreed. The texts did not show any threats. They did not show pressure beyond the eagerness to meet. The tone felt common for online dating. Many new acquaintances tried to move from screen to in-person quickly. What troubled investigators was how fast Destiny agreed. Those closest to her said she normally took time before meeting anyone new. Something in the tone may have made her feel safe. Detective Marcus Clay entered the room holding the early analysis of Tyler's account history. The email used to register the profile traced to a free provider. The phone number belonged to a prepaid device that had not been activated with a full ID. The profile photo could not yet be matched in face search databases. Analysts suspected it might not be the real person she met. Clay placed the papers down and studied the image again. Whoever created the account had been careful. Enough details to seem real, not enough to track easily. The investigators listed him on the board as a critical person of interest, but emphasized that nothing tied him to the crime yet. The goal was to verify his real identity. Henson called the examiner's office for updates. The autopsy was underway. They expected to confirm cause of death later that day. The medical examiner's notes would guide investigators into understanding the final hours. That information mattered deeply when cross-referencing statements, phone data, and digital contact times. Meanwhile, the team expanded the search for Destiny's recent activity. They reviewed her social media posts from the week prior. Nothing suggested conflict. She shared photos of her children and a short message about wanting to take another step forward in life. Friends commented that she had seemed hopeful. She had spoken often about rebuilding stability. She did not appear reckless. One of Destiny's closest friends, Jasmine, arrived mid-morning to provide more insight. She had known Destiny for over 10 years. She described her as protective of her children, cautious with men, and determined to start fresh after a difficult breakup earlier in the year. Jasmine said Destiny had been open about exploring dating apps again, but approached them slowly. She often shared screenshots with friends before meeting anyone. This time, she had not. Jasmine remembered Destiny mentioning someone who made her laugh, someone who seemed gentle and listened well, someone she described as easy to talk to. The tone reminded investigators of a common tactic: quick emotional bonding, mirroring, reassuring language, techniques often used by people who wanted to move faster than normal. The detectives took note but stayed objective. Nothing about these messages confirmed anything criminal. Analysts continued reviewing Destiny's phone metadata. Her device last connected to a tower near a suburban neighborhood that stretched into quiet streets. They mapped the area and assigned deputies to canvas. The focus was not only to find witnesses, it was to locate any cameras pointing toward feeder roads. Many neighborhoods relied on doorbell cameras. Those devices often captured details unnoticed by the human eye. At the same time, the interview team prepared to speak with Destiny's former partners. They followed standard procedure. Relationship history could reveal tensions or unresolved issues. Detectives approached each interview calmly and without assumptions. One former partner worked at a local plant and arrived willingly to the sheriff's office. He explained his schedule the previous night. He showed time card records, confirming he had worked a late shift. He had not spoken with Destiny for several weeks. The tone stayed cooperative. Detectives verified his alibi and moved on. Another individual she once dated lived several towns away. He reported no recent contact other than occasional greetings online. His phone data supported his statement. Nothing placed him anywhere near Destiny's last known movements. By noon, the autopsy results arrived. Destiny had died from blunt force trauma. The examiner believed the injury occurred quickly. There were no signs of prolonged struggle. There were no defensive markings on her arms. This suggested she might have been caught off guard or incapacitated early. The time of death aligned with the early estimate. Around the same window, her phone went dark. The exam also revealed faint residue consistent with material found inside certain vehicle interiors. Investigators needed lab confirmation before drawing any conclusion. Still, the finding pointed toward the possibility she had been inside a car shortly before her death. Henson gathered these findings and built a second timeline. Destiny met a man using the name Tyler. She drove or entered a vehicle with him. Something happened between 8:58 and 9:15. She ended up at a rural location 20 minutes away. Someone placed her body near the tree line and left no phone behind. Every step aligned with someone who moved deliberately. Yet investigators did not want to overlook alternative leads. They reviewed the gas station video again. The silver sedan that entered after Destiny left might have been connected. Analysts enhanced the footage throughout the afternoon. A partial plate became clearer. Four digits appeared readable. The state could be Texas, though the image blurred. Analysts sent the still to the Regional Fusion Center for cross-checking plates registered to similar sedans. While this work continued, the digital team traced the IP address used for Tyler's profile. It linked to a house in a quiet neighborhood. The house belonged to an older resident who appeared unrelated. Detectives visited the location. The man answered the door and listened with concern as they explained their visit. He said he had not used dating apps. Further questioning revealed he shared his Wi-Fi with a nearby relative. The relative lived two houses away. Detectives visited that house next. A young woman answered. She confirmed multiple people had used her Wi-Fi, including visitors. She did not recognize the photo of the man calling himself Tyler. The detectives collected the network's data and returned to the office. The lead did not close the case, but it narrowed the possibilities. Later that afternoon, the lab returned early findings from items recovered at the scene. A small fragment of fiber found on Destiny's jacket belonged to a synthetic blend common in vehicle seating. It did not match her own car. This supported the examiner's early observation. She had likely been inside someone else's vehicle. Around 3 p.m., another witness stepped forward. A rideshare driver had seen a woman resembling Destiny walking along the edge of a parking lot the previous night. The driver remembered because she appeared to be texting intensely. A man stood near a silver car a few spaces away. The driver noticed him because he leaned on the car and kept looking around as if waiting for someone. The witness could not confirm if the two interacted. Still, the detail matched the earlier footage. The detectives documented it and asked for more information about the area. Meanwhile, analysts dug deeper into the messaging patterns between Destiny and Tyler. They noticed something subtle. At times, the writing style shifted. Word choice varied. The punctuation pattern changed. It suggested more than one person might have been involved in crafting the messages. Or it indicated someone using inconsistent control of language. Determining which possibility was correct required more analysis. Clay raised the idea that the messages could have been written to match a personality. Destiny responded well to. If someone studied her social media, they could tailor a tone that made her trust quickly. This tactic had been documented in other cases involving online deception. Henson added this theory to the board, but marked it as speculative until more evidence supported it. Detectives then interviewed coworkers who had seen Destiny earlier on the day she disappeared. One coworker said she had been excited about meeting someone, but kept the conversation vague. Another said she mentioned wanting a chance to start fresh. They described her as calm and in a good mood. No anxiety, no visible fear. That detail mattered. It meant she did not foresee danger. Nothing in the early exchange with Tyler had raised an alarm for her. By late afternoon, phone records from Tyler's prepaid number arrived. The device had connected to several towers throughout the week. Most connections placed it in a general region, a few miles from where Destiny disappeared. The pattern indicated someone who lived or worked in that area. The device turned off shortly after Destiny's phone went silent. It had not turned back on. That fact raised its importance. People rarely power off phones entirely unless trying to avoid digital tracing. Henson and Clay reviewed these findings with their lieutenant. They needed a list of residents and frequent visitors to the mapped area. They requested utility records, past police calls, and vehicle registration lists. These steps did not imply guilt. They simply created a structured way to identify the real person behind the alias. Around 5 p.m., analysts returned with a major lead. The enhanced plate from the silver sedan had matched a vehicle registered to a man in his early 30s. He lived 10 miles from where Destiny was found. His name did not match the alias given online. He had a minor record for traffic violations, but no violent history. Investigators did not jump to conclusions. They prepared to interview him first. To do that legally and safely, they needed to verify his timeline. A deputy visited his listed place of employment. A supervisor confirmed he had not been at work the night Destiny disappeared. The shift he usually worked had been changed the week before. That placed him unaccounted for during the relevant window. Detectives placed his name on the board as someone who needed immediate contact. Before scheduling the interview, Henson studied the digital records again. The prepaid device used by Tyler had connected to a tower less than half a mile from the silver sedan owner's address earlier in the week. It did not prove anything on its own. Many phones passed through that area. Yet the proximity added weight to the need for clarity. Clay prepared the interview room. His goal was simple. Ask open questions, note inconsistencies, compare his statements with the digital timeline. Everything hinged on whether he could explain his movements on the night Destiny died. Before the interview could begin, another piece of evidence arrived. A local store's parking lot camera had captured a video of the silver sedan leaving the area around 8:55 p.m. That timestamp placed the vehicle moving minutes before Destiny's phone went dark. The direction of travel matched the route toward the discovery site. Detectives contacted the vehicle owner. He agreed to come in. He arrived just after 6:30 p.m. He appeared calm. He did not ask many questions about why he had been called. When asked about his activities the previous night, he paused for a long moment. He said he had stayed home. Clay asked if anyone could confirm. The man said he lived alone. Henson showed him the still image of his vehicle near the gas station. His expression tightened. He admitted he had gone out briefly. He said he had been picking up food and stopped to check something on his phone. He said he did not see Destiny and did not speak to anyone. He insisted he left the area alone. Clay continued questioning. He asked whether he used dating apps. The man said no. When asked if he owned a prepaid phone, he said no again. Every answer felt guarded. Nothing openly contradicted itself, but nothing eased investigators either. After the interview ended, detectives compared his statements to the data. Several points did not align. His explanation for being near the gas station did not match typical routes to local restaurants. The prepaid phone had connected repeatedly to a tower near his home. He had not acknowledged any ownership. His reluctance to discuss his night in detail raised the stakes. Still, investigators remained careful. They needed solid evidence. A person could lie out of fear even when innocent. They returned to the data and continued the analysis. Late that night, the digital team uncovered a key pattern. The IP address used to create Tyler's dating profile had connected on nights when the silver sedan's home Wi-Fi was active. The timestamps created a consistent link. It did not prove he was the only person who used that network, but it placed the digital origin extremely close to his daily environment. Henson took a moment to process the board, Destiny's movements, the messages, the vehicle footage, the autopsy timeline, the partial footprint, the synthetic fibers, the prepaid device, the interview inconsistencies. Every element pointed toward a person who understood how to mask identity and move quietly. As the night crew settled into the office, Clay wrote a single line under the chapter's central question. It captured the turning point of the investigation. The digital trail no longer pointed to a stranger. It pointed to someone real, someone with a name, someone who had stepped into Destiny's life through a screen. The investigators now needed to determine one thing with absolute clarity. Was he the man she met, and could they prove it? Chapter 3, The Break in the Pattern. The third day of the investigation began with a sense of careful urgency. Detectives knew they had gathered enough threads to suggest a direction. What they lacked was the piece that joined them. The break that transformed suspicion into demonstrable fact. Clay arrived first and reviewed the digital logs again. Information from several sources had come in overnight. Among them sat one item analysts believed could change the course of the case. The prepaid phone associated with the alias Tyler had connected briefly to a cell tower at 11:15 p.m. two nights before. The tower served a wide area, but the device's registration ping placed it within a tight radius. The coordinates fell near a small strip of houses north of town. When analysts overlaid this location with the history of the silver sedan's movements from previous traffic cameras, an intersection emerged. The path of the vehicle and the phone's final activity converged near the same residential pocket. Henson studied the map carefully. She saw the line that ran from Destiny's last confirmed sighting at the gas station to the short-lived phone activity, to the direction the sedan traveled, and finally to the rural pull-off where Destiny was found. The pattern used time and geography in a way that suggested intention. A single device, a single route, and a single night had formed the structure of the case. The investigators finally had the outline they needed. Before moving further, they waited for full lab results. When the examiner's office called just after 9 a.m., everyone gathered. The material found on Destiny's jacket had been confirmed. The fiber-matched upholstery from a common mid-sized sedan model produced in the last decade. This category included the silver sedan registered to the man interviewed the previous evening. It did not prove his vehicle was the only one. It did, however, place him within the set of vehicles consistent with the transfer. Another result came soon after. The cast footprint from the scene matched a size range consistent with the man's general build. Analysts could not confirm it was his. Shoe prints did not always offer that degree of certainty. Still, the fact that the print belonged to a size unlikely to be worn by Destiny and matched the general characteristics of a male-sized athletic shoe reinforced the idea that someone else had stood in that brush. As investigators reviewed these findings, another update from digital analysts arrived. They had extracted metadata from the dating app messages. The earliest messages from the profile showed that the location services on the device used by Tyler had been active during the account's creation. That geolocation placed the device at an address within a quarter mile of the vehicle owner's residence. Analysts noted that geolocation data could have drift, but the match was close enough to raise a clear question. How many people living within that radius matched the timeline, possessed a vehicle of the same type, and had been unaccounted for during Destiny's disappearance? The lieutenant authorized a deeper background check on the man tied to the silver sedan. His record showed nothing violent. He had worked at several local jobs. Neighbors described him as distant but polite. Nothing about his history drew immediate alarms. Yet investigators had learned many times that the absence of a known pattern did not indicate an absence of risk. Many offenders had clean records until their first major crime. By midday, the district attorney's office met with detectives to discuss a warrant. The decision depended on whether reasonable grounds existed to believe the silver sedan contained evidence tied to Destiny's death. The district attorney reviewed the digital connections, the timeline inconsistencies, the fiber match, the vehicle's movement near the gas station, and the rapid deactivation of the prepaid phone. The argument held. A warrant for the search of the vehicle and phone records associated with the man's known devices was granted. Henson and Clay led the team assigned to execute the warrant. Officers arrived at the residence quietly. The silver sedan sat in the driveway. Its exterior showed no visible damage. A light layer of dust covered the hood. The officers approached, secured the scene, and informed the man that the vehicle would be searched under the warrant. He complied, though his expression tightened again. The search began. Investigators examined the interior of the car meticulously. They collected fibers, dust samples, and soil from the floor mats. They looked for signs of a struggle, signs of cleanup, or signs of hasty disposal. In the back seat, they located a small loose thread that resembled the fiber found on Destiny's jacket. The lab needed to confirm, but the potential match added weight. They also located faint impressions on the passenger side that suggested someone had pressed against the surface recently. These were not fingerprints, but shallow marks in the upholstery. Clay photographed them and noted the position. If Destiny had been in that seat, the impressions might correspond to her estimated height and posture. Next came the digital search. Analysts examined the man's primary phone. It showed no trace of dating apps or communication with Destiny. That did not surprise investigators. The alias used a prepaid device, not the primary one. They then examined routers and laptops in the home. One laptop showed no dating app installations, but analysts discovered that a browser had accessed several dating websites within the last month. Again, this alone proved nothing. Many people browsed dating platforms casually. Still, the history was documented. The key moment came when analysts examined the Wi-Fi router logs. They found that an unknown device had connected to the network during the same hours when the alias profile was active. The device name did not match any known phone in the house. The MAC address was recorded. When cross-referenced with network data from the dating app provider, it matched the prepaid phone used by Tyler. Clay exhaled slowly. This connection tightened the investigative net. The alias phone had connected to the suspect's network. The alias profile had been created from within the approximate radius of his residence. The suspect had been near the gas station when Destiny arrived. His vehicle matched the fiber category. He could not fully account for his time during the window of the crime. Piece by piece, the case solidified. When investigators returned to the office to compile the findings, they prepared for a second interview. This time would be different. They had evidence. They had inconsistencies documented. They had a path that could no longer be dismissed as coincidence. The man returned voluntarily. He sat across from Clay and Henson. His shoulders appeared tense. His answers came slower. When asked again about his activity near the gas station, he repeated that he had stopped to check his phone. Clay asked which phone. The man hesitated, then said his regular phone. Henson asked if he possessed any other device. He said no. That answer mattered. Investigators now had logs showing a second device on his network. They did not reveal this immediately. Instead, they asked a new question. Did he ever use online dating? His answer remained no. Clay then presented the enhanced image of the silver sedan. Next, he presented the timestamp of the vehicle leaving the lot near the same time Destiny's phone went dark. Finally, Henson presented the fiber result. The room stayed quiet except for the hum of the air conditioning. When asked again if he had met Destiny, the man said no. He had not spoken to her, had not seen her, and did not know her name before detectives contacted him. This statement created a direct conflict. The prepaid phone associated with the alias Tyler had connected to his network. Destiny had met someone whose digital identity matched that alias. The alias account had been created inside the radius of his home. The vehicle had traveled the exact route tied to her disappearance. Clay shifted the interview to a more precise line of questioning. He asked the man whether anyone else used his network. The man said no. He lived alone. He had no recent visitors. He had no roommates. This closed off alternative explanations. It narrowed the digital origin directly back to him. Henson then presented the router data. The man's expression changed. He leaned forward. He asked if he needed a lawyer. Detectives acknowledged his right to consult one. He said he wanted the questioning to continue. His tone had shifted. He appeared defensive and uncertain. He pressed his hands together and looked down at the table. When investigators asked about the prepaid phone's MAC address connecting to his network, he said he did not know what that meant. When asked whether anyone else had access to his home, he said no. When asked whether he had ever used a prepaid device, he said he could not remember. This series of responses marked a turning point. Not a confession, but an erosion of credibility. The investigators maintained professional composure. They did not accuse directly. They presented facts. They let the contradictions emerge naturally. After 2 hours, the man requested to end the interview. He left the building. No arrest was made at that moment. Investigators continued compiling evidence. The break came just after 7 p.m. Analysts confirmed that the fiber found in the suspect's car matched the fiber from Destiny's jacket with a high degree of specificity. This alignment allowed investigators to place Destiny physically inside the vehicle. Shortly after, traffic camera footage from a nearby intersection revealed a clearer image of the passenger. The lighting was low, but analysts enhanced contrast and determined that the person resembled Destiny. The timestamp placed the vehicle on a route that led toward the rural location where her body was found. The segment connected one more piece of the timeline. With these developments, investigators obtained a search warrant for the suspect's residence. Officers executed the warrant early the next morning. Inside, they found a prepaid phone box in a bedroom drawer. The device itself was missing, but the box's serial number matched the prepaid provider's record of the alias account. It had been activated 2 weeks before Destiny's death. They also found a jacket with soil traces. The soil shared characteristics with the type found in the rural pull-off. Further analysis was needed, but the alignment added yet another supporting element. The district attorney met with detectives once more. The evidence now formed a cohesive chain. Destiny had arranged a meeting with someone using the alias Tyler. The alias connected to a device linked to the suspect's residence. The suspect's vehicle had been present near the gas station at the same time Destiny disappeared. Fiber evidence connected Destiny to the car. The suspect could not explain his timeline. The prepaid phone had been deactivated minutes after Destiny's phone went dark. Physical traces in the car supported her presence. Based on this cumulative evidence, the district attorney authorized an arrest warrant. The arrest took place quietly just after noon. The man did not resist. He requested an attorney immediately. Detectives read him his rights. He remained silent. He offered no explanation, no admission, no denial. He walked between two deputies and sat in the back of the patrol car. The case moved formally into the charging stage. In the following days, investigators continued refining the timeline and gathering supporting statements. Forensic analysts presented their findings in a structured manner. The district attorney's office prepared the case for court, separating proven facts from allegations still under review. The official charge filed was murder. The man was held without bond. Destiny's family received the news through the liaison officer. The room grew quiet as they learned that the person behind the digital mask had been identified. The officer explained the process ahead. Trials took time. Evidence needed to be presented clearly. The family responded with a mixture of grief, relief, and exhaustion. They thanked the detectives for their work. They asked whether Destiny had suffered. The officer relayed what the examiner had said. The injury had been fast. There were no signs of prolonged fear or pain. This offered them a measure of comfort. As the case entered the legal system, community conversations grew louder. People questioned how a digital connection could turn fatal so quickly. Advocates for online safety held meetings to discuss increased awareness. Law enforcement agencies revisited their outreach programs and reminded the public that digital environments could create opportunities for people who sought to exploit trust. Reporters covering the case noted that Destiny had been a mother of three, working to rebuild her life. Friends shared stories about her kindness and resilience. Her children became the focus of local support efforts. A fundraising effort helped cover expenses for the family. The community gathered to honor her memory in a candlelight vigil 1 week after the arrest. Detectives Henson and Clay continued their work behind the scenes. They documented every step of the investigation to ensure the case file reflected accuracy. They reviewed interview transcripts and ensured timestamps aligned. They noted which evidence formed direct links and which remained circumstantial. Their commitment reflected a single goal. The case had to remain strong, clear, and fair. Months later, the district attorney held a press briefing. He provided a summary of the case without revealing sensitive details. He explained that the investigation had combined digital forensics, physical evidence, and neighborhood canvassing. He emphasized that online deception had played a role. He also clarified that all suspects remained innocent until proven guilty. The court process would determine the final outcome. Destiny's family continued to attend hearings as the case moved forward. Their presence offered a quiet reminder of the human cost. They listened to each update with steady resolve. They carried both grief and a determination to see the process through. Investigators reflected on the case and what it revealed. Online spaces offered new ways to connect, but they also offered new pathways for those who intended harm. The case demonstrated how digital trails, though invisible at first glance, could speak loudly when analyzed correctly. It also showed how quickly trust could form between strangers, especially when one party tailored a personality to fit another's hopes. As the year closed, Henson wrote her final summary. She ended with a line that captured the central message of the investigation. Digital meeting spaces could offer possibility, but they also demanded vigilance. Destiny had taken a step toward new beginnings. She had chosen hope. What met her instead was a person who hid behind a crafted image. Clay added a short note beside her closing line. He wrote that the case reaffirmed an essential principle. When someone enters a digital space with hidden intent, the most powerful defense is awareness, shared conversation, and early verification. The investigators' work ended with the acknowledgement that some risks could not be predicted. Yet through careful reconstruction and digital transparency, the truth could still rise. The case of Destiny McLean stood as a reminder of both vulnerability and resilience, a reminder that justice, though slow, could still arrive with clarity.